Kaf Shinayin Dalet. We're going to talk about the following psukim. The psukim say in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk of Gimel, Pasuk of Dalet. Rak Chazak Lilulti Achol Adam. It's talking about how you're supposed to eat meat and the way to eat meat and how not to eat meat, etc. And then you have to be strong. You can't eat blood. Now I'm going to use the term when we're talking about blood. I'm going to use the term of eating, even though you think it's drinking because it's more of a liquid than it is a solid. So I'm going to be using eating because the pasuk, simply put, uses the word eating when it comes to blood. So either it means congealed blood or it's referring to blood that somehow is in some type of an object. But regardless, don't ask me why I'm saying eating blood instead of drinking blood, because we're dealing with the eating part of it. Yeah, double and nefesh, because the blood is the soul of the animal. That's why you're not allowed to eat it. You cannot eat the soul together with the flesh. And this is lo sochlanu, you can't eat it. You should spill it on the ground like water. And then it says lo sochlanu a third time in the next pasuk. Now the Rabbeinu Bachaya says the Isra of Dam is mentioned 7 times in the Torah. 7 times we're told not to drink blood. 5 times in Vayikra, 2 times in Devarim. Technically there are 3 lavin in Devarim alone. Right? Why? Because the people needed to be warned about it again and again. And the question is why? Why was it so prevalent? Why were people drinking blood? So Yonatan ben Uzziel says that there was a Yetzer Hara to do so. That people were so into it, people loved doing so. So what does that mean? So Rashi tells us the Machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon ben Azai. It's interesting. Usually ben Azai is just known as ben Azai. He's not normally known as Shimon, nor is he known as Rabbi Shimon ben Azai. He never became a Rabbi. That's why he was known as ben Azai, because he was still a Talmud and he was younger when he passed away. So that's usually the reason why. So Rabbi Shimon ben Azai seems to be a little bit of an interesting mistake. It might be he means Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, but either way, regardless, Rashi says this machlokas is between the two. Rabbi Yehuda feels that the reason why it says chazak is that even though there were shatuf in drinking blood, everybody was into drinking, eating blood at the time. It was a common practice. They're telling them to stop. You have to be strong and stop yourself. Ben Azai argues that it shows how strong you have to be by other mitzvos. If blood, which is disgusting, people are told to stay away from so many times, kol shekein other mitzvos and averos, you have to be strong about them. If you have to be strong about this, for sure you got to be strong about eating pig, or about putting on tefillin, or about all the other things that the mitzvos are, you have to be strong about them. So kal vachomer, you shouldn't succumb to your yetzer hara when it comes to other things out there. Now the Rabbeinu Bachaya brings down that the word chazak is there because blood naturally makes your body stronger. And that makes a lot of sense. All I could think of when I thought of this was the old Lance Armstrong thing. When Lance Armstrong was first caught with PEDs, with performance enhancing drugs, and they said that you were a cyclist, that they had this, etc., Lance Armstrong's call is that the only thing he did was that they took out some of his blood. I forgot what they call it. They put it into something. Centrifuge. Very good. They put it in a centrifuge so that it hurried up a little bit, and then they injected it back into his system, which was technically legal according to cyclic whatever according to whatever they have. And he used to put that in. Now it turned out he was just taking a lot of PEDs, but in the end, that was what he was calling. Meaning, it's supposed to. The idea of blood is it's supposed to get, once you inject a little bit of blood in you, it gives you a little bit more energy. You're ready to go. Eating blood, meaning taking it in, gives you more energy. That makes sense, right? Because the amount of oxygen that's inside there. So if you get it, especially if you're getting it from an athlete, if you take in blood from an athlete, you should know, by the way, well, I can't say
it. You want to go on blood. If you really don't.
Yeah, no, that's what it is. Lance Armstrong's own blood. That's
cool. You guys go to the there or the high altitude places because your body naturally produces more
blood. Produces more, and then
you go out to low altitude.
So that's what they end up doing. So whatever, you know what? I think he said that specifically. I only did it when I was going downhill and not uphill or something like that. That was the call that he used. It was a crazy claim by Lance Armstrong, but that's what he said he did. He didn't, but he said he did that, and that's the idea, so it makes sense. So chazak, you'll be strong even if you don't eat blood. Eating blood, we know is going to make you stronger. We know it's going to make you more powerful. Here he's saying chazak, says Rabbeinu Bachaya, even though you won't be doing that to yourself. The Panim Yapos explains it as well. They were able to taste anything they wanted in the month. For the last 40 years. 40 years they could have anything they wanted in the month. They were so used to what they had in Egypt. And they drank blood in Egypt because that's what the Egyptians did. Since they were so used to drinking blood in Egypt, when they ate the month, they allowed allowed that taste to be in there with them, so that when they were eating the mun, they kept thinking about bloody objects, like raw foods, and they were having that in their heads. So the past 40 years, that's what they were thinking about as they were eating the mun. So that was difficult for them to get over. Says the Farim Yafos, that's why chazak, you have to be strong, because it ain't going to be easy. It's not going to be easy for you to stop thinking of blood when you're eating something or want to have actual blood when the mun is gone. But you still have to be strong and you have to stop doing it. And the Rashbam says it's a pure halachic issue. Since blood is swallowed up into the flesh of the animal, when you shecht an animal, you have to make sure, chazak, lebilti achol adam, make sure that when you're eating the flesh of the animal, there's no blood left in it. How do you do that? Well, we do it by salting the animal. There are other ways of doing what's called shechti ba'arei, cutting it up in different ways and then roasting it on a skillet. But getting rid of the blood, especially by these types of things, like for example, the kaveh, the liver, which is filled with blood, you're still allowed to eat it, but you got to make sure that the blood is gone. That's the idea, and the Rabbeinu Bachaya says for that idea. So again, when it says the word chazak, what does it mean? We have a machlokis and Rashi between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, whoever the Rabbi Shimon is, Bar Yochai or Ben Azai, whatever it is. The Rabbeinu Bachaya says it's because you're still going to be strong. The Panim Yafo says because you have to make sure that you won't have that taste in your mouth. And the Rashbam says halachically you're allowed to eat the kaveh. You got to make sure to salt meat, and that's the idea behind it. Now. What?
You can't salt
those. So that's what I said. Salting normal things are there. Yeah. By the liver, you have to do shesti ba'arev, and you have to put it up on top of a skillet. That's in Hilchos Malicha, meaning be able to put it up and roast it so that it comes down. It's the same thing with the heart. We don't eat the heart, but I believe Sephardim still do. The udder is different.
Chicken hearts? You don't eat chicken hearts?
No. So Ashkenazim don't eat any hearts.
Really? Yeah. Not animal. Not
they got a strip.
They do.
Because they're selling the Sephardi. It's also sweet bread. I believe that's the brain? So whatever the brain is also supposed to be the same way. So we didn't have it. What we did is we got a whole cow when we were doing Hilchos Shechita and whatever it was. So we got a whole cow, we shechted the whole thing, and then we took all the stuff and we did everything that you could possibly do with the stuff. We made the liver, made the brain, made the heart and everything, but we had the Sephardim come over and eat it. So I still remember the Sephardim going sitting there and like eating it and pretending that it was good when it was really terrible. There were other things that we had to do, but no, it wasn't stuff like that. It was good times, though.
You make
too much blood. The Ramah says that we don't eat heart or brain. That's one of those things that are out there. Anyway, the Ibn Ezra, now we're going to get into the more esoteric part of eating blood, what this all means. The Ibn Ezra...
Stronger, right?
I'm sorry?
So yeah, that's what we said. Kind of like the protein supplements, there's one that they make out of blood.
That makes sense.
There's a blood. There's
yeah, that will make sense. The vitamins that come in. Yeah, that makes sense.
So
the Ibn Ezra says in Parshas Kedoshim that this is what the Egyptians would do in order to make deals with Shaitan. In order to get deals with demons, what they would do is they would eat meat with a ton of blood in it. They'd spill the blood on the ground. They would even drink cups of blood, right? And that would attract the Shaitan to them, and they would be able to do crazy things. That's the Ibn Ezra and Parshas Kedoshim. It's hinted to over here. Ibn Ezra says, go see what I wrote over there. And the Avi Ezri writes a crazy thing if you want to look it up. But either way, regardless, the Ramban goes a bit further. They would shecht korbanos to the Shaitim themselves, purposely leave the blood on the ground, and then eat the blood on the ground afterward. In other words, scoop it up and eat it afterward, inviting the demons to come, so to speak, eat at their table. They loved doing this. They were so used to doing this, they couldn't stop themselves, says the Ramban. That's why they had to be warned again and again not to, because demons could do whatever you wanted. So all you have to do is ask them to do something. Maisa Shaitim, which was something that people did back then, asking them to help you or to do these crazy things for you. People were so into it. It was an easy way to tell the future, an easy way to go around.
So easy to do.
It's just like Kishuv.
But why is it Kishuv? I mean, they exist.
It's part of it.
Isn't Kishuv because it's not real?
Ramos,
it's not real.
No. That is true according to the Ramban, but we're going with the Ramban over here. And you should know, the Mori Bukhum speaks of this as well, but the Ramban says, right, that this is what they used to do. That's why Lo Sochlu Al Adam is written right by Lo Sinachashu, Lo Siksom, all the different Isurin about doing magics and things like that is included with eating blood, because that's what they used to do. That was their process of getting there. So the truth is, all this stems from the Mori Bukhum. Of the Rambam. The Rambam says, he writes at length, and I guess he lived in Egypt, so he must have known what they were doing even then. They would do magics with the blood by eating it. They were doubled to ruin, shaving and ruin these different types of demons. They would bring down Shefa from the sun, and it allows you to find hidden gems and precious stones. That's what they would get from the demons, from whatever deals they made with them. They would find precious gems and stones in them. Now, the Mornibukum still holds that Maisa Shadim never really existed. It's people fooling themselves. Nonetheless, he said that was the process, and people would find stuff. Rabbi Yonis and I just asks, well, wait a second. Shlomo Melech seemed to do the same. Shlomo Melech made trees that gave off golden fruits. They had golden fruits growing with them. It's mentioned three different times in the Gemara Yuma, Masechta Yuma, that he had a tree that grew gold. So if somebody says, did money ever grow on trees? Money grew on trees. Just by Shlomo Melech and only in the Beis HaMikdash. But he grew trees with golden fruits that came from it. The Pirkei Kahuna, the young Kohanim, made all of their money off those trees. Says Rabbi Yonah Zayach, and only Rabbi Yonah Zayach just can say this. He said, we all know that he made those using the Shefa of the sun. So if the Shefa of the sun is usher, according to the Rambam, because it's the way the Shadim do things, then why was it mutter for Shlomo Melech to make trees out of gold out of the sun? How could he do such a thing?
Solar panels.
Craziest question I think I've ever heard in my life. Solar panels. All right. It's almost exactly that. How you do it? Yeah, Bruce.
So for Dom, for the Gypsies,
I don't think you can survive off it. I think it was enough for them to get a little bit. That's a good call, actually. I didn't even think of that. That Maka's dumb. I should have thought of that when going all the way through.
It is even water.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think that might have been part of it, that nothing happened with
like
it.
Drinking seawater.
Yeah, I don't think you can't survive off it. You can't survive off it. I think that was in it. So that's the question. Is there a way of doing it in a good way? That's really what Jonathan is asking. Is there a way of doing it in a good way? So he said the following. He answers, it's usher to do so through Ashbath and Shadim, getting Shadim involved. That's a tummy way of doing it. You can't get involved in that way, but it's mutter to do so through Shemos HaKadoshim. If you're using HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shemos to do so, then it's going to be mutter, and that's what Shlomo Melech did. He didn't do it through Kishuv, he did it through Shemos. Now, how do we know that he did it this way? Says the end of the pasuk over here, Awa Oret Tishvachenu Kamoyim. If you spill it on the ground like water, that's what Dom has to be. And here's the unbelievable part, he says. If you want to make something happen through Shemos HaKadoshim, and you want to make sure that people know that it didn't happen through blood, it's got to be through water. And here's the reason why. Water is able to annihilate any magic that there is out there. I couldn't find this Gemara. I was so upset about it. It took me like 20 minutes last night. And finally I said, forget it. I'm not going to look for it anymore. There's a Gemara where in Amora, I'm pretty sure it's in Amora, I'm pretty sure it's not a Tana, but maybe it is, and that's why I couldn't find it. Where in Amora, and I thought it was in Shabbos around Daf Kuf Nun, I just couldn't. Where an Amora bought a donkey from a magician, and as he brought it over water, over a bridge, on top of water, the donkey just dissolved and became nothing. He brought it back, and they said, you should have known that when you're buying from us, that you're going to buy magic. You should have known on your own. I'm sorry? Water on the witch, right. The water on the green witch. Clearly that was based on the Gemara. Right? But that, in any case, water is able to be levaled. By the way, have you ever read The Wizard of Oz? Worst book of all time. Anyway, I thought it would be good. It's terrible. I don't know why they made a movie out of it, but it turned out well for them. I'm just saying, the worst. But you should spill it like water. If you spill it like water, then you know there's no magic involved, and then you're allowed to do all these things. That's what Shlomo did. He spilled it out like water, and that's the idea behind it. That's when you know. And then, if you do it that way, Yitam B'chol B'nach HaKorepa. Now, I'm just telling you as a side. Remember the Rav Yonah Tanaitchitz, the one that just said this, is the famous machlokus between him and Rav Yaakov. The machlok is about the following. This is about 40 to 50 years after Shabtai Tzvi came in, and Shabtai Tzvi used all these Shemos HaKadoshim to be able to pretend that he was a great Makobel. He wasn't. Gada Jose, his right-hand man, was giving him everything to say and doing whatever it was, and he was doing all this Kabbalah Mises. And after Shabtai Tzvi was found to be a fake by converting to Islam, etc., that's when the rabbis put out a ban. They put out a harem that no one can use Shemos HaKadoshim or anything like that. It's one of the reasons why the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Luzado was in big trouble during his time because he was also into Shemos and Malachim and all these things. And when he came out with the Mesil Shem and Derek Hashem, Mesil Shem was at the end of his life, Derek Hashem was toward the middle. When he came out with these Sfarim about what he was doing in the letters, people threw him in Chair. Rav Moshe Chaim Luzado, the Ramchal, was thrown in Chair because you couldn't do it after Shabbos.
Didn't they care mostly in Ashkenazi countries?
100%, yeah. Sfarim never took
it.
So it was still taken because there were a lot of Ashkenazim that still lived there. important to remember there were a lot of Ashkenazim that went there because there was freedom of religion, so to speak, there, even though they couldn't do certain things. But people did go there, so the Ramchal was still thrown in Cherem. Rav Yonis and I just started writing kamilos. Kamilos are amulets. In order to get rid of certain sicknesses, you write certain shemos of Hashem down in these amulets, and you let them wear it, and somehow it would heal the person. It's not something that we know how to do, although there are, the Ben Ish Chai was well known for making amulets. I once saw a kamilah from the Ben Ish Chai. It's amazing what he did. It was at somebody's house, a guy by the name of Malka, I think was his last name. I forgot what his name is. He lived in Ramat Eshkol. He was in Eretz Yisrael and Kolo, and he was from a family that got a kamilah from the Ben Ish Chai for his great-grandfather or something, and he had it up on the wall. They undid it and put it up on the wall. Crazy stuff inside it. It was amazing to be able to look at. And Rav Yonis actually used to write up these kamilahs. Rav Yaakov Emden, son of the Chacham Tzvi, the Yaivis, got so angry at Rav Yonis Nachshon for doing so, he immediately threw in Cherem. Rav Yaakov Emden owned a printing press and started printing it out to other people and showed everybody, this is evil, you can't do this, etc. Rav Yonis Nachshon always argued back and said, I'm doing it in the mutter way. I'm doing it through the Shemas Gedoshim in the mutter way. He used to argue this point. So I'm not saying that Rav Yonis Nachshon got this shot based on what he did, but I'm saying that this makes sense in Rav Yonis Nachshon's way of going about life, the way he understood how to do things, that he allowed himself to do these certain things that we'll explain. At the end of the day, by the way, the Pnei Yeshua got involved in the fight. The Pnei Yeshua voted, he held like Rav Yaakov Emden and told Rav Yonis Nachshon to stop making the kamilos, and the city that the Pnei Yeshua was the rav in threw him out of town. They threw the Pnei Yeshua out of town. The Pnei Yeshua on his way to go to be a rav in another city died. It was a very, very sad time for the Pnei Yeshua. The Noda Yehuda got involved. There was a lot of stuff going on in this machlokas between Yaakov Emden, Rav Yonis Nachshon, which was absolutely crazy. Yeah, look, I mean, later on in life, the Gra says that Mashiach would have come during that generation if not for that fight. That's what they said. The famous end of the story is that the Chassam Sofer used to have all the Sfarim of Rav Yonis Nachshon on one side of his base medrash, and all the Sfarim of Yaakov Emden on the other side of the base medrash. He would never put them on the same side because he said they're still in a fight. That's what he said. Okay, so at one day, his son came in. I don't know if it was the Chassam Sofer or Shimon Sofer, but one day his son came in and saw that they were on the desk of the Chassam Sofer right on top of the other. He said, Abba, what happens? So the Chassam Sofer said, they just made up in Shemayim. This is like 150 years later. But that's what Chassam Sofer for you. They just made up in Shemayim. Everything's all good now. They finally, it's taken them a while, but they're good. So now we can put this farm next to each other. I still have my Rav Yonis Nachshon and my Rav Yaakov Emden farm on the other side of the room of one another because I'm not the Chassam Sofer. I don't know what to do. So anyway, regardless, that's that. That's the Farsi Yonism. The Sforno says a bit of a diuk. Even though the blood can give you like a nefesh, it can bring about this type of thing, and you can find all about the future and do crazy miracles to it, still don't do so. And he says that's the pshat, ki adamu anefesh, the dam is something awesome, nonetheless you can't do it. Rosham Shmuel Volhirsch speaks about this at length. Amazing pieces over here. He says the following. He says, the whole purpose of this pasuk is totally different from what we've been doing up until now. Meaning, we've said up until now, how it might be halachic, how there might be something, whatever, how you're so used to it, and maybe there's something about shadim, etc. Says Rosham Shmuel Volhirsch, all of the danger involved in drinking blood and eating blood is that it damages your spiritual soul. That's what it does to you. It damages your soul and makes you different. Eating meat is a very gashmi thing. If you've ever seen a person eating ribs, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Okay, you know, if you see a person eating ribs, that is not a normal human thing. That's not normal. And you're sitting there and you get it all over your hands, licking your hands afterward. It is not normal to eat ribs. You literally feel like an animal. It always goes back to the Far Side. There's an unreal Far Side comic in which you see like Thag sitting there. You know, it's his cavemen guys. So there's two cavemen sitting in a cave, and one guy named Thag, right, is sitting there, and he's got a huge mammoth bone all on the side of his face. And the other guy's like, Thag, you got a little stuff on the side of your face. It's like this massive mammoth bone. That's what you used to eat. It's like, it literally is barbaric to be able to go all the way through. So it's warning. The Torah is warning the eater. Don't, I know you're going to give into your tithes a little bit by having a steak or by having a hamburger or a hot dog, etc. As long as it's Romanian. You're giving into your lust, your taivas, by doing so, by eating meat. Don't go too far and eat the blood with it. The blood is like the ultimate of giving into your taivas. The blood is the material that with every pulse beat, I'm quoting from Rav Hirsch now, circulates throughout the body. And is the means by which the soul exercises its mastery over the body. Okay, that's the idea of what the blood does. It's the ability to circulate and bring your body, to allow your body to literally function. Therefore, the blood bears the soul. It is the ability for the soul to get through the entire body. So animal blood, which bears the animal soul, cannot enter the realm of the human soul. That's the whole point. You can't allow that blood to go into your bloodstream. Because you're dedicated to a mission of something that's spiritual, something that's above everything else, drinking that blood is going to cause you to have an animalistic nature, some type of tendency or influence from that animalistic nature that's there. For that reason, we are told, do not eat blood. Don't eat Abraham Minachai. Don't eat blood. That's the idea of what it's supposed to be. Says reverse and that's it. Says the Grum. It really is not even about blood. It's about just eating meat. Don't eat the nefesh im abasar. Don't eat the meat just because you want to just give into your taivas. Don't sink yourself into anos achiloska. That's what you have to do. You have to be careful not to go. So, truth is, says Orchaim Balazin, the Gruz Talmud, that there's nothing more disgusting. Nothing in the world. And in this case, he agrees with Pita. There's probably the only thing that Orchaim agrees with. Then killing an animal, cooking its flesh, and eating it. Even if you add on ketchup. There is nothing more disgusting than that. You're a human being full of ruchnias. What are you doing? Why are you doing that? The truth is that the only reason why we do it, says Rav Chaim, is because there are chiyuvim. That's why we eat meat. But to do so when you don't need to, that's foolish and gluttonous. That's the idea.
What do you eat today?
Simcha.
Is that the same? That's not a chiyuv like eating korbanos.
No. I mean, eating korbanos definitely was.
I'm not talking about that.
But nowadays, yeah, ain simcha. We do a bas v'yayin, and that concept still exists. So even though, again, it's not exactly the same, nonetheless, there are so many similarities. It's an amazing idea of what it's supposed to be, of what eating meat is like, that a person should stay away from overeating, from eating more than what you possibly have. I'm telling you, I was just in a restaurant three nights ago, and I'm sitting there, and they served this steak that everybody told me that I had to get. It was like, I don't know, glazed, anything, whatever it was. I'm sitting down there, and as I'm eating it, I'm like sitting there like, oh my god, oh, this is so good, this is the greatest thing ever, oh my gosh. And then toward the end, I'm just sitting there, it was really good, right? And then toward the end, I was just like, what am I doing? This is like, I'm literally not a bit of ruchnias. I know there are people that can pretend l'shem shemayim and have it in their mouth. That is not happening by me at all. It's like l'shem my stomach, l'shem, you know, my arm. That's all I'm doing. There is nothing else there. It is literally all I thought about is, okay, this is not going to stop me from ever eating steak ever again, but all I thought about was like a mooing cow like sitting right next to me and just being like, that's my brother. That's all I was thinking the whole time. Like, I can understand why people aren't like that.
You continue eating.
Oh, yeah. Of course, yeah, afterward. I'm just like, your brother's awesome. I'm sure you would be awesome. I would take this from you as well. It's unbelievable. Anyway, so the Kli Yucker says that.
I have fish and chicken as well.
Technically it does, but chicken and fish are not the same as meat. I think we can all agree to that. Granted, there's chili and sea bass, and there's whatever, you know, and chicken, I get it. Chicken wings.
It's like ribs.
But it's not the same. It's nothing the same as eating ribs and steak. There's nothing like it. I mean, everybody knows that. Yeah, you can have like a fish steak and people can pretend it's the same. It ain't the same. Anybody who tells you that is clearly not a guy. There's no way. Or he's never had barbecue sauce before. It's one of the two. There's no way that it just doesn't happen. I love having that barbecue sauce. Like, what's it called? There's a barbecue sauce called lip smacking. No, lip smacking. Bone sucking, lip smacking barbecue sauce. I'm just like, yeah! That's right! And there's even I just heard a commercial on the radio not too long ago. It was for like a beer. It's like, we're watching football and we're eating, we're drinking beer and we're having barbecue wings. I'm like, oh my god, we're so disgusting. We are absolutely terrible. But it's exactly like, I would be thinking the same way. I'm just like, we're drinking a beer with it. And it was just that. I think it was for apple cider. I was like, this different type of thing.
Trying to make us manly.
I know, seriously, we're like trying to make it all manly, and it's like we're still drinking apple cider and watching arm wrestling on TV, and I'm like, no, this is not happening. It's like a silly, you know, it was one of those cars. Anyway, that's that. So the Kleucker says that the reason why we don't eat meat is because drinking the blood caused you to become cruel and angry, the same way the reverse just brought it out. And he says that such mitos can be passed on to your kids through spiritual DNA, or just simply put, your kid, through, I guess you could say through nurture. The kid is there watching you, and the kid sees what kind of a person you are and says, oh, I'm going to be like that guy.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm sorry?
Physical DNA.
Oh, it could even be that way, right? But either way, but the Pasuk says not to eat blood, leman yitav lecha ulevanecha acharecha. So you and your children are unaffected by eating that blood. That's the idea of what the pasuk is talking about. And that's why right afterward we go into Nevi'eh Sheker, Irani Dachas, and getting rid of all the nations that are living in Eretz Canaan. Meaning it seems cruel to destroy all the nations in Eretz Canaan, to destroy a Navi Sheker, to destroy an Irani Dachas. It seems cruel. The Torah is telling us we don't want to be cruel. We're not doing this out of cruelty. We're doing it because the Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to do it. And to show us that, we say, don't eat blood. Because if you eat blood, you will be cruel. And then you'll be doing those things because you're cruel. Don't do that. Do the exact opposite of that. That's the idea behind it. Okay, we're going to skip this to Shavar Yonis for right now. Go down to the bottom. The Shach says, the Shach HaTorah, the famous Makobo, that dam is a lashon of dammin, is a lashon of money, of value. It refers to getting your reward in this world instead of the next. Lo soklu al hadam, as well as lo soklenu, and all the psukim that talk about not eating blood, means don't take your reward in this world. Don't allow yourself to be rewarded here. It's better to accept old gullus in this world, says the Shach, and then get all of your reward in olam haba over there. And that's the idea of don't eat the blood, ala aretz tishpachanu kamayim. Spill it out on the land so that you can eventually get everything up and shine. It's almost like a remez, the idea behind it. He compares to water. Just like water causes fruits to grow, right? Not immediately, but eventually they grow. So to us, our mitzvos will grow fruit for us. But that fruit will be only later, la'asid lava, in the future when we get an olmava. So the whole sukkah about eating blood, aside from the pshat about not eating blood, is a remez to where we should get our reward. That's how the Shach understands it. The Yalkut Ruveni says, shofech Domin, one who spills blood, meaning a murderer. A murderer is always called shpichus domin, spilling the blood, will be misgalgal into water. Now the Arizal says that if we knew what it was like to be misgalgal into water, we would be crying all day long. A murderer is misgalgal into water and is put in areas, because water never stops flowing. It's always flowing from one place to the other, which means you can never rest. The person, so to speak, who's misgalgal into that water can never rest. And the worst punishment of being water is when you're in a waterfall, because you're constantly falling, or you have other water falling on top of you. And that, he says, is the worst punishment that can happen to a person. How exactly it happens, I have no idea, because, again, we don't fully understand Gilgulim, we're not into that. But that's what he says, is the Yalkut Ruveni, that's what the Psukim are referring to. And again, it's a remez, ala oretz tishpechenu kamayim, that if you spill blood, your Gilgul will be into water. It will be spilled water, flowing water that goes through. Last thing we're going to say for today, and it's an unbelievable piece. The Miyam Lois asks, we're warned again and again. Again, the Rabbeinu Bachaya started us off by saying 7 times we're warned not to eat blood. To the point where we throw out eggs. If there's a tiny little bit of a blood spot on them, right, we throw out eggs. Even though by all of the eggs that we have nowadays, there's no fertilization, there's not even a rooster anywhere near them. If you see a blood spot on an egg, technically it's probably mutter. There really should not be any problem with blood spots in any of the eggs that we have. Okay, but nonetheless, if we see a blood spot on our egg, we throw it out immediately. Okay, how could it be that we constantly have blood libels, where the nations are accusing us of using their blood, Christian blood, right, to put inside our matzahs, or they have it inside our wine? How could this be? We're told 7 times in the Torah not to eat blood. Now I understand. Maybe it's, well, they have to keep telling them because they keep doing it. But clearly we're not supposed supposed to be eating blood. And clearly it's allowed. And we all know that there's such a thing as a mitzvah above Avera. Even non-Jews must realize that we wouldn't do that if it says seven times in the Torah that we shouldn't eat blood. There's no way we would do that for matzahs. There's no way. There's no Gemara, there's no Chumash, no anything. How could it be that we're being accused on something which we're so careful about? Yeah.
The coin where Shatan is, right? Even though it's also for everybody else.
Correct.
Right? So they probably think that this is like one of those permitted...
But then you have to go into it. The shotness is already there. It's straight out in the Torah that they should wear it that way. Do you know what I'm saying?
To be anti-Semitic.
But that's for sure true. But why of love? No, but even more so. First of all, it's got to be Christians. Some Christians must have known it sometime. But why is it that it keeps coming up? That's what it really, the Mamelis is really asking. Why does it keep coming up when it has no basis in MS whatsoever? There has never been a person who has used blood for a matzah. In fact, by the way, halachically speaking, if you get blood, if a person is making matzah and bleeds even a tiny little bit into the matzah itself, if there's any blood that hits the matzah, we immediately call it chametz. And you are not allowed to use that matzah. Blood is machmitz our matzahs. So that makes no sense. There's not even a little bit of truth.
Shira.
So what's the chat? I'm sorry?
The
blood might be a little bit thicker than normal juice. So it might be a little bit different. But I'm just saying, there's got to be a reason behind it, because there's nothing that happens randomly. Why is it that this specifically could have happened? And thousands of Jews have died because of it. Where does it come from? So he says a very cryptic answer. Doesn't explain it. He says, he answers this gezeiros because of the brothers of Yosef, who dipped the cloak of Yosef into blood, and then showed it to their father and asked if he recognized it. Now, he doesn't say all those words. The answer the Mamelis always gives, I got to tell you, I don't fully understand. Now, granted, I'm reading in the Hebrew translated version of the Mamelis. Plus, if you guys know your history of the Mamelis, the original Mamelis was written by a man by the name of Rav Yaakov Kuli. Rav Yaakov Kuli died very early on, I think in Parshas B'Shalach. It was taken over by another guy, I forget what his name is. It's a long word. Somebody Sfardi, I don't know, it sounded like a Sfardi name with a race or something. Either way, he took over, and then he died in the middle of Bamidbar, somewhere in like Shlach or something like that. And then it was taken over by a bunch of people altogether. So I don't know who wrote this originally, I don't know who was translated, I don't know what the Mamelis meant, but the Kovitz Mamarin by Rabbi Chanan Wasserman goes on and he explains it, unreal. It says, Maisa Avos Simen Labanim. He explains, this is what it means. Anything that happens to the Avos is going to happen to the children. The Shvatim wanted to prove to Yaakov that Yosef was dead. So what did they do? They completely lied. Even if they had good intentions in doing so, they took Yosef's cloak, dipped it in blood, and showed it to their father, and said, Hakernok Sahaksonis bin Chayimlo. It recognizes, is this your son's cloak or not? Is your son's cloak or not? Once they did that, once that was made, that there was a lie based on blood by the Shvatim, from then on, there are always going to be blood libels, which have no basis in truth whatsoever. It's a lie with blood involved that the Jews are now involved with. Which is an unreal type of answer. And he says, because the brothers did that, it happens in all generations.
Wasn't the Asarug and Malchus a kapara for that?
No. The Asarug and Malchus were a kapara for the sale. But there was no kapara for the blood, the coat, the sonus papasim that was dipped in blood, which they had no permission to do, and seriously didn't even have much part of the story. To be honest with you, we go back into that, we can answer this at a different time, but it's one of the biggest questions in Chumash. You didn't have to dip the cloak. You didn't have to do that. Hide the cloak. Throw it in a pit and it will never be seen ever again. And when your father asks, hey, what happened to Yosef? They say, we don't know, we've never seen him. To say that they found a cloak with blood on it already starts the person thinking, what in the world is going on here?
There are
animals on it. You're not going to be able to put a cloak like that. They destroyed it. So if you're going to destroy it anyway, you might as well just dig a hole in the ground, put it in the ground, and never tell your father ever again. Remember, these guys were in Dothan, which was a 3-day walk from Be'er Sheva, which is where Yaakovinu lived. They could have hit it in Dothan. Yaakov never would have ever known.
In a way that would have been strange, even more cruel than what they Yaakov did, what they did do, because they
have a final.
Yeah, to Yaakov, okay, they're showing that there's an element of finality. But
see, I hear it and I don't hear it at the same time, because in the end, Yaakov didn't have any finalization, but I hear it. I hear it because it does
logic. From
but they wanted to. Nonetheless, because they did this, there are answers. I have a couple answers. The honest truth is, I do have answers to this question. I'm just saying it as a kasha because I'm showing you it was there's no need to do it whatsoever, and it became a pure lie. That lie, myself was similar, but even with all the greatest intentions of the world, was going to happen, and therefore there are blood libels and Klal Yisrael. An unreal answer by Rabbi Kahn. It's a thought process. It's really a thought question to be able to go through, but an unreal answer that he goes through. If you think about it, so our four points that we wanted to make today, that the issur of blood, why we had to say the word chazak, what was so bad about it, then what happened with the demons and what they ended up doing with it. We then went into Rav Hirsch saying that you get affected by it, the kliyakar, the gra, etc. Really, Rav Yonasan, but we didn't go into Rav Yonasan. And then little things, the Ramazim of the Shach and the Al-Kuruvani, and the Miyam Loeis about blood libels. We're going to stop with that, guys. Have a great show.